From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Great to see you. Great to be back home in Chicago. We got a really exciting show for you today. We got comedian and filmmaker Bobcat Goldthwait coming on later to play our game. But first, it is Mother's Day this weekend, and I know you forgot to get her anything. Well, we are here at the last minute to save you. Just call us up, play our games, win Carl's voice for your mother's voicemail, and he can record something like this.
Hello, it's your mother. I can't answer the phone right now because I died from shock the minute you called.
Done. You're ready to go. That's a service we do for you. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Well, hello. Who's this?
I am Tisha Vanique Hood from Dallas, Texas.
Tisha Vanique?
Yes, Tisha Vanique is my first name.
Tisha Vanique is that's some first
awesome.
Name. That's an
yes,
awesome first name.
Sounds delicious.
It is delicious.
To me, it sounds like a very complimentary adjective. Like, oh, wow, that dress, it is so Tisha Vanique. You know what I mean?
I love it.
I have that with such a long first name. Do you have a nickname?
Tisha.
All right, not very imaginative, but I'll take it. Welcome to our show, Tisha, if I may. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, and author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville. It's Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Tisha.
Hello.
Next, it's a television personality and a real-life correspondent on CBS Sunday Morning. It's Mo Rocca.
Hi, Tisha Vanique.
Next, it's a humorist and author of the new audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comments and Comic Pieces. That's available at a download near you, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Tisha.
Welcome to the show, Tisha. We're going to be informal, Tisha and I. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Your first quote is a tweet from Pee Wee Herman.
Thank you, Mr. President, for standing up for equality. Yours truly, Pee Wee Herman Clooney.
That was Pee Wee Herman, also known as Paul Rubens. Or should we say the new Mr. George Clooney? After President Obama's announcement that he is, in fact, in favor of what?
Same-sex marriage.
Indeed, yes. For the past 3 years, President Obama has been very clear on his position about gay marriage. He was going to lie about it until after he was reelected. But in the end, he made this historical announcement in an interview broadcast Wednesday afternoon, interrupting Tim Gunn, who was interviewing a fitness guru in a sleeveless tee. It was like Reagan calling for Gorbachev to tear down that wall during a commercial break on Family Ties. See, the thing is, the White House had planned something bigger when he finally said what he thought. They were going to have Obama land on an aircraft carrier moored off Greenwich Village in front of a banner saying, fabulousness accomplished. But what happened, and I'm sure you all know this, is that Joe Biden let the cat out of his mouth. He went on Meet the Press last Sunday, and David Gregory asked him, well, what do you think about gay marriage? And Biden was like, yep, you bet I'm for it. Why, David, I would marry you if there wasn't a table in the way.
I kept seeing this phrase everywhere in the papers that Biden forced Obama's hand on gay marriage, which
yes.
I'm sort of uncomfortable with. He should have asked his hand.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Much more appropriate.
Yeah, but I think this all started with the Olympics. I really do think it started with the synchronized same-sex diving, the synchronized diving.
Yeah. That's true.
The pairs diving. That is really gay.
Very.
No, no. It's fantastically gay.
I think the original Olympics, when they ran naked from Marathon to Sparta, I think that was gay.
More gay.
That was gay.
And then there's figure skating.
That's my case.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
When you start with the word underwear, you expect the next word to be model.
That was Sossin Kazak, a Kuwaiti writer. She was writing in the Kuwait Times. What was the word following underwear in a big story this week?
Oh, goodness. I've drawn a blank.
Really? Somewhat of an explosive story.
Oh, underwear bomb.
The underwear bomb, yes.
The double agent.
Right, the double agent. That's it. The word first leaked last week that the U.S. had prevented another underwear bomb attack on an airplane. But when exactly, and why wasn't the Obama administration bragging about it like they like to do? Because the bomber, it turns out, was a double agent. Whoever this guy was, he was amazing, infiltrated Al-Qaeda. He learned their secrets. He gained their trust.
Well, that's the thing that I would love to have been in that recruitment meeting. You know, it's just like, okay, we're going to get your family out of Yemen. We're going to take care of you. We're going to set you up in Paris. And all you got to do is wear the exploding underpants.
They really kept this thing under wraps. There's one person who clearly knew nothing about it. Joe Biden.
Right. Otherwise.
Otherwise, we all know.
Just this week, because everybody's trying to find out who this amazing agent was. Turns out he's British. All right. You know who it was. It was like James Bond starring on Her Majesty's Secret Underpants.
It was a queue showing him through the shop, and then
yes, exactly.
there it is. The tidy whities on the.
So, 007, boxers or briefs?
This watch is a missile launcher, and your car can swim, and then there's these.
It must have made it a little more difficult for Bond to seduce the beautiful female terrorist, though. You know, it's like, oh, no, dear, don't put your hands there. No, really.
I am happy to see you, but that's a bomb.
All right. Here, Tasha, is your last quote.
Sarkozy comes up short.
That was a headline about Nicolas Sarkozy once again coming up short, this time in what?
The presidential campaign or election.
Yes, in France. Very good. Right. Like, that was right. You got it. Like many things on his kitchen shelves, the second term turned out to be beyond Nicolas Sarkozy's reach.
Oh, what are we going to do without him?
That's a good question. The French people did not like Sarkozy's austerity program, and this is true. They thought he was rude. They thought he was rude. They thought he was rude and arrogant, and that did not bother Sarkozy at all. He was just happy somebody, for once, thought he was looking down on them.
When the French people think you're being rude and arrogant,
it's true.
You've got a problem. But now, you know, the best revenge, they say, is to live well. And listen, this guy's going to retire into the French countryside with Carla Bruni.
Right. He'll spend his time.
So have your fun, Peter.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure he'll be very happy. He'll spend his time standing around in gardens. Mr. Sarkozy is being replaced by a socialist president named François Hollande. He is known, this is true, by his nickname Monsieur Flambe or Mr. Pudding. An observer said that's because of, quote, the softness of his manner and his indecision, unquote. Oh, by the way, that observer, the mother of his four children. How do you have four children if you are made of pudding? Observers believe that Mr. Pudding was put over the top by the last-minute endorsement from Bill Cosby.
He's great pudding!
Carl, how did Tisha do?
She did very well, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Tisha, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Congratulations.
Right. Thank you.
Well done.
Great job, Tisha Benique.
Thanks so much for playing. Bye-bye. We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Of course, Mo, interesting study this week about climate change. Some scientists are suggesting that 150 million years ago, what contributed to global warming?
Gassy dinosaurs.
Yes, that's exactly
really?
Right.
Oh my gosh!
Dinosaur flatulence.
Wow.
Yeah, very good.
Speaking of underwear bombs.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Can you imagine a caveman lighting a match there?
No, it's terrible.
With a little torch there. Jeez.
Just as giant yellow hummers cause climate change today, hideous, clumsy beasts were also responsible, apparently, for global warming long ago. British scientists say that the herbivore dinosaurs, like the Apatosaurus, were among the worst offenders because of their plant-based diets.
Yeah, high fiber. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second only to the Burritosaurus. According to the researchers, it was a really bad time for the T-Rex because, you know, when another dinosaur lets one go right in front of you, those arms are never going to be able to wave it away.
And I bet.
Yeah, I always thought the Mesozoic era was probably a pretty unpleasant time to be around, but
now you know.
Now it's even less appealing.
And windows were not yet invented, so you couldn't open one. It was terrible. Yeah.
That really redefined silent but deadly. My gosh.
Yeah, it's just like, you're killing me here, man. You're killing all of us.
I'm a hungry, hungry herbivore. Plants are what I'm hungry for. I don't eat insects, don't eat critters. Just give me some of them darn fern fritters. Hungry, hungry herbivore. I eat stems and shoots and roots and more. I like big leaves and tiny creepers. Don't like bugs and slugs and peepers.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kassel. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Tom Baudet, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. It is, of course, time again for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're my Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jess Murrow from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
How are things in Milwaukee?
Good. It's finally warming up, so you can sit on the patios.
That's nice.
Yeah. Drinking
your beer or so, I'm
told. Exactly. I think it's the biggest bar capital or whatever.
Yeah, it is. It's fabulous. Well, welcome to the show, Jess. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jess's topic?
Pin the tail on Grandpa.
Despite parents' best efforts, kids' birthday parties sometimes end in tears. But this week, we learned about a special new service for birthday parties that will guarantee misery and unhappiness. Guess that true, terrible new birthday party idea, and you will get Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I am.
Let's hear first from Amy Dickinson.
Don't you get tired sometimes of your kids bugging you about what awesome thing you're going to do for their next birthday party? Maybe Dora the Explorer is lost in the weeds, or maybe Pin the Tail on the Donkey is just too darn political for you this year, or maybe you just really hate your kids. If any of this applies to you, you need to hire Dominic DeVille's evil clown for your kids' next and maybe last birthday. For a fee, the evil clown will stalk your child for an entire week, making prank phone calls and sending terrifying text messages and notes warning your child that she will be attacked by an evil clown. And then, on the birthday itself, the evil clown will, in fact, attack the child, smashing a cake into his face. Dominic DeVille reassures parents by saying that during its reign of terror, the evil clown will never break into your home. Cost of a lifetime's supply of birthday therapy is extra.
Evil clowns stalking your children and springing their trap on the birthday. Your next story of a horrible birthday party comes from Tom Baudet.
There is not much sweet about turning 16. Hormone imbalances, acne, gym class. About the only redeeming aspect of a 16th birthday is the thrill of driving a car all by yourself. But Chad Farnham of Amelia National Safety Labs in Lucy, Kentucky has a cure for that too. Sweet 16 crash test parties. We thought it would be a great way to have some fun and show new drivers the damage that a crash can do. The parties amount to the birthday boy or girl and their friends watching a driver safety video, then lining up behind the screen along the test track to watch a couple of crashes. The first one is lower speed, but we fill the dummies with red syrup to get the right effect, explained Farnham. They're all pretty pale when we send the second car down at 50 miles per. But then the dummies bust open like pinatas and they see they're filled with Skittles and coupons for the laser tag place next door. Asked how many crash test parties they've held, Farnham replied, just the one so far.
Crash test parties, fun and a safe driving lesson. Your last story of parents ruining their child's party comes from Mo Rocca.
For kids who love to play doctor, there's no substitute for the real thing. That's the thinking behind the Where Does It Hurt birthday party package for kids 8 to 10 years of age. Produced by AARP, the birthday boy or girl and friends will be outfitted in lab coats and stethoscopes, then driven to a nearby nursing home. Each little doctor gets to spend 2 hours listening to an elderly resident describe his or her aches and pains. Then the mini medics will sort pills, adjust the thermostat, fill out claims forms, adjust the thermostat, and even learn to spell Epsom. The best part of all, the birthday boy gets to give the oldest patient a sponge bath.
All right. Jess, are you by any chance a parent yourself?
I'm not. I'm only 27.
Oh, okay. Well, someday if you are a parent, you'll be able to purchase perhaps one of these services for your child on his or her birthday. Is it from Amy Dickinson, the terrifying, scary clown who stalks your child leading up to the birthday? From Tom Baudet, the crash test party where kids get to joyfully look at the result of car crashes before they start driving themselves? Or from Mo Rocca, the play doctor party where they get to go to an assisted living home and play doctor with the residents there?
I wish it was Amy's, but I'm going to guess Tom.
So you're gonna wish it was Amy's scary clown.
I think that's sort of funny.
Maybe it's best that you don't become a parent. So you're gonna skip Amy's story. You're going to go for Tom's story of the crash test party.
Yes, I hope so.
Well, we actually spoke to somebody who provides this service.
They're always going to remember their 10th birthday when they had the clown following them for a week. But that's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, no.
That was the clown known as Professor Chumley. You can hire him to torment your children at evilclownsforhire.com. So I'm so sorry.
I have to remember that. As
it was hilarious and it was true. You should have picked Amy's. Sadly, you did not. You didn't win, but you did pick Tom's story, earning him a point. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Jess.
Bye-bye,
thanks.
Jess.
Bye.
Now the game where we ask people who've done really remarkable things about things they never had time to remark on. Some people have sick and twisted ideas and end up in jail. Some people have sick and twisted ideas and end up making great, funny, sick and twisted movies. Comedian, writer, and director Bob Cat Goldthwait is thankfully one of the latter. His new movie is God Bless America. It opens this weekend. Bob Cat, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
It's a great pleasure.
I have to make a correction there.
Please do.
I actually have spent some time in the Huskow.
Really? You were in jail?
Sure.
Sure, he says. Like, this happens to everybody. What happened?
Well, I've gone to the pokey on a number of times.
Do you call it the pokey when you're there?
Well, yes. I'm trying not to work blue, but there's a reason why they call it the pokey.
I understand. And what was the occasion for your incarceration, as we say on public radio?
A lot of different dopey things, mostly when I was a teenager, drinking too much and then deciding to break in the county auditorium to make popcorn and things like that. Didn't really command a lot of respect on the cell block when
really?
You went for popcorn theft.
Really? I killed two guys. What'd you do?
I stole popcorn.
You know, usually when I meet comedians, I'm always assuming that they were the quiet, shy kids who got attention by being funny. You don't strike me as being one of those kids.
No, I wasn't like, I didn't have that nerd rage.
Yeah? You had rage.
I just had rage. No, I actually was the homecoming king, which really...
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Now, this was in Syracuse, New York, is that right?
Yeah, that gives you an idea of how athletic and handsome my high school was.
Was this an ironic homecoming king, or you're like, seriously, like, oh, we'll nominate Bobcat, that'll be great. Or was it like, no, he's cool, he's the captain of the football team, we look up to him, he's homecoming king.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
did they dump
a whole lot. I was wondering what all that pig's blood was on me that night.
No, you were the homecoming king. So were you like a football player, a high school?
No. I wasn't. But I guess I was popular. And I also went to high school and grammar school with Tom Kenny, who later on went on to become SpongeBob SquarePants. I don't want to name drop. But,
no, you didn't. You know, when I first started seeing you in movies and stuff in the 80s, you have this incredibly loud persona.
Right.
This sort of almost, you know, manic guy. And I'm wondering how close that was or I guess still is to who you really are.
No, I think like in real life, I'm actually quiet and I mumble a lot, but that's not very lucrative.
No.
So I just amped it all up. You know, I used to direct the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually the guy in the booth, you know, going, ready, camera one, ready, two, two. But I think people really thought I was going to be in there going, ready, one.
That would have been great.
Recently that my impression of me doesn't sound like me.
Really?
Yeah.
But you know what's really weird? I have never heard you talk any way other than your onstage thing that you do. I didn't even know that you had like a regular voice.
Well, it's a scam.
I like it.
Oh, thank you.
Keep it going.
I feel bad now. I have to kill you, though.
We're trying
to keep this stuff under all hush hush.
Okay.
Where did that guy come from?
Well, it was the 80s, and there was a lot of people, you know, everybody got assigned a wacky persona. So just to kind of play into, you know, my early stand-up was just like me going on stage, and I would read a real Dear John letter I got while I was trying to do observational humor.
Wait a minute. So you'd come out and you'd start doing observational
humor. I'd go, hey, thank you. It feels really good to be here. And then just start crying and then explain that it doesn't really feel good to be here. This girl Lisa sent me. I shouldn't out that, but she actually did send me a Dear John letter.
So you would go out and you would read an actual Dear John letter that you'd gotten from your actual, by that point, ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, and then I was crying, and as through the tears, I would go, "Hey, how come women go to bathroom in pairs?"
And
was like, "How? My wife is so fat." In the crowd, "How fat is she?" I just told you I don't even have a girlfriend. I don't have a wife. It was very deconstructive.
It really was. And were you doing this in your like bobcat persona? So you're like, my wife.
Yeah, I guess it was. You know, I always just felt more comfortable just kind of hiding behind a character than being myself on stage. You know, look, my heroes were always people like Andy Kaufman and Groucho Marx and stuff. You know, people who didn't really go out of their way to say, "Hey, I'm just like you."
You're like, "I'm nothing like you at all."
You sound really comfortable right now.
Oh, I'm very comfortable. It's I'm actually sitting in Jell-O.
Yeah.
It's a very comforting feeling. It's not as comfortable as pudding.
So you wrote and directed your first movie in the 90s was Shakes the Clown, am I right?
Yeah, my fine alcoholic clown movie.
This was like, I've heard it called the greatest alcoholic clown movie ever made.
Well, the actual quote is, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but it was called the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown
movies. No, it's me. So the clowns in this movie don't take off their makeup, go home. They're still clowns. They live in the clown ghetto. They go to the clown bars. They drink clown drinks, and they get clown drunk.
Yeah, but, I mean, they do take their makeup off occasionally. I mean, the first time you see me, I only have half my makeup on because I'm waking up after having a one-night stand with Florence Henderson.
How often has that happened?
I don't know, man. I got to tell you, that was just, I just wrote it in. That wasn't even going to be the opening, but the idea that run around with Mrs. Brady.
And so you write in, it's like, you know, Shakes wakes up, he's bleary-eyed, he looks over, next to him in the bed is Florence Henderson. You write that down.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, I didn't think I could get Florence Henderson.
And so how did you get Florence Henderson to do the scene?
Well, she's pretty randy in real life.
No.
Yeah. She actually said, "Could I put some clown makeup on my breast?" And I was like, "Well, it's not my Wesson Oil contract flying out the window."
So you've gone on to have a remarkable career as an independent filmmaker, and your latest movie, God Bless America, opens this weekend. I'm lucky enough to have seen it. The plot basically is a guy who gets fed up with American society and decides for a variety of reasons to kill everybody who annoys him.
Yeah, but it's not really just everybody that annoys him. I mean, the character of Frank is actually, you know, trying to kill people who aren't nice.
He's right.
It's not a personal agenda. It's more just for people he thinks aren't nice. I mean, the character is played by Joel Murray. He's depressed. He gets fired. He gets diagnosed with a brain tumor. No wait, it gets funnier. And then he's watching a show that's very similar to my Super Sweet 16.
Right, the MTV reality show.
Yeah, and then instead of committing suicide, he actually drives 400 miles and he shoots that girl from my Super Sweet 16. Spoiler alert, I have that backwards. I don't know how to do that yet. But yeah.
So, I mean, I have to ask you, I know it's really hard to get movies made these days.
Right.
Raise funding. And this movie seems so utterly, what's the word, uncommercial.
Right.
I'm going to make a movie in which a guy and a young girl go around and shoot everybody that you hate in American life.
I don't think you understand. My movies make hundreds of dollars.
Oh, wow. Well, Bobby I. Goldthwait, it's great to have you with us. We've invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
They Call Me the Velvet Castle.
Since you're known, or were, for your rather unique speaking voice, we thought we'd ask you questions about some other performers, like Carl here, who are known for their smooth and sultry voices. Get two of these three questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Bobcat Goldthwait playing for?
Bobcat is playing for Max Kelly of Hoboken, New Jersey.
Here is your first question. Ready to go?
Sure.
Here we go. Now, Mel Torme, known as the Velvet Fog because of his great voice, what was the great soul singer Barry White's nickname? Was it A, the walking aphrodisiac, B, the beso mas profundo del mundo, or C, the walrus of love?
Oh, C.
The walrus of love. You knew that for a fact?
Yeah, I was on the first time I was on Letterman, I was like 20 years old, and I was on a show called Camping with Barry White Night.
There you are. He was known as the walrus of love. He was a rather heavy man. I want to know who called him that to his face, though.
Well, it wasn't a nickname he had to his face. It was usually people who were behind him, and they were speaking in really quiet tones. Hey, Barry! Hey, Barry! Hey, walrus of love!
Next up, James Earl Jones. You'll know what his deep voice is like. What you may not know about James Earl Jones is what? A, he was a celebrated boy soprano until his voice changed. B, he didn't say a word in public all through elementary school. Or C, he naturally, if he just relaxes, has a thick Chicago accent.
I'm going to say B.
He didn't say a word?
Yeah.
You're right. You're absolutely right. As he says, he had a terrible stutter.
Yeah.
And didn't get over it until he got to high school and found a good teacher to help him with it. All right, you're doing very well. Of course, the last voice, one of America's most beloved, the deep voice of Elvis Presley. There was an auction of the king's belongings recently, and this item fetched $17,000. Was it A, a 60-minute cassette of nothing but screaming girls? He reportedly couldn't sleep without it. B, a jar of his hair. Or C, blueprints for Spaceland, the mansion he planned to build someday on the moon.
Wow, that's great.
I'm going to go with Spaceland.
Spaceland. No, it was actually a jar of his hair.
Yes.
Why there was his hair in a jar, we don't know, but it went for $17,000.
It seems like it would fetch for a lot more with the possibility of cloning.
It's
right.
True. We could have lots of little Elvises running around. Carl, how did Bobcat Goldthwait do in our show?
Bobcat had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins from Max Kelly.
You won! Well done. Bobcat Goldthwait's new movie, God Bless America, opens this weekend. It's great, it's funny, it's very strange. Bobcat, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I had a wonderful time. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye.
It takes that one voice, just one voice.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Amy Dickinson, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl comes out in favor of rhymosexual marriage. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, newly declassified documents reveal Osama bin Laden was known throughout al-Qaeda for having a severe weakness. He was really, really bad at what?
I know he liked Just for Men hair coloring. Is that? No.
He did. He did color his beard. That was sort of a different
right,
kind of weakness.
He was bad at...
He was bad at something.
Is it a game? No.
No. Among other things, he always typed in all caps. Very annoying.
A bad emailer?
He was a terrible emailer, apparently. He wasn't very good at it. Failing kidneys are not the only thing that Osama bin Laden had in common with your grandpa. He had a lot of trouble with email. You can't blame him. He spent the last 20 years in caves, hideouts, and war zones, and he was using a really out-of-date email service called Death to America Online. And this is funny. A lot of the time, for security purposes, he would type out his emails, put them on a flash drive, give them to an aide who would then take them to a coffee shop with Wi-Fi to send them, which is why every Starbucks in Afghanistan has been hit by a predator drone.
Did he like lots of forwarding, I bet?
Oh, yeah. Because
funny jokes.
He was constantly forwarding these lame fatwas. It was terrible. And he was reportedly really bad at handling attachments, and the worst, he'd always accidentally hit reply al-Qaeda.
Reply al-Qaeda.
So that would be, it would be especially annoying if, you know, you write an email and you say, see the closed attachment for fatwa instructions, mm-hmm. and you give it to a courier who smuggles it into another country, gives it another courier
right.
who smuggles it to some secret location, and then he forgot to attach the
attachment. You know. Could you resend, please?
Right.
Yeah.
My word processor can't read this format. Could you resend? Oh.
God, they should just print it out and pack it in their underwear. Carry it that way. Much easier. What would Osama autocorrects to? Like if you're trying to, it must have been
Obama,
very
frustrating. Obama, clearly.
Yes, it must be very, very frustrating. I'm not Obama, I'm Osama.
Tom, new data suggests that 40% of New York City's 911 calls are caused by what?
Misdialing?
Yes, well, specifically, butt dialing.
Oh.
Accidental calls, yeah. It just stinks. You get in the subway after a long day at work, you sit down, and your butt calls the cops. Dispatcher's like, what's that, sir? Too bootylicious? You're not ready for this jelly? We'll send an officer right away. To cut down on the high rate of butt emergencies, city officials have introduced an educational outreach initiative to teach New Yorkers to lock their phones in their pockets, to wear looser-fitting pants, to utilize their front pockets more. They also want to make people aware of all the butts with real emergencies whose calls were not taken seriously.
I love how they have to educate people about that. Wouldn't you think that if it happens to you once, that's it?
Right.
Like, you never do that again?
When the cops show up, guns
yeah,
drawn.
Yeah, the cops, yeah. And they take your butt into custody? I mean, it's like...
I thought the answer was going to be drunk dialing.
When people get drunk, and like, I really want to talk to a dispatcher right now. Possibly. The flip side of this, of course, is that it's been a boom time for 911 operators who happen to be fluent in butt.
You know, you keep saying butt. It's pocket dialing. It's really more about the thigh.
You think?
Well, if you put it in your back pocket, you're going to crush your phone. Do people really put their phones in their back pocket?
Not everyone wears tight pants like some people.
That you aren't going to mention right now. Amy, a recent survey of 1,000 Americans found the majority of women fantasize about having a sexual encounter where?
Sorry, I was lost in thought. What?
Well, where were you thinking of, Amy?
It's that scene in that Tom Cruise movie, Risky Business, on the train. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Have some water, Amy.
Sorry.
Okay, the Durex Company, which is interested in this topic, did a survey of 1,000 Americans, and they found that the majority of women, the highest number, imagined a romantic encounter where? Picked this was their number one choice.
In the kitchen, of course.
No. Of
oh
course,
my God.
Really?
We're learning a lot here.
If you got bored with your partner, you'd have an excellent view of Paris to distract you.
And the Eiffel Tower?
And the Eiffel Tower, of all places.
Oh,
that
really?
Was
that's so sharp and pointy.
I know.
Right.
and cold yeah. and exposed yeah. and crowded sort of, with tourists.
It's metal yeah. and it's
and the food's,
rust
the food's
on it.
Not that great.
33% of women admitted to fantasizing about doing it in the Eiffel Tower.
Huh.
In bring the
same
a blanket.
Stunning, 31% of guys said the White House.
No.
The other 69% said right here if you're ready now. I really. Who thinks of popular tourist destinations?
I know.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh, honey, I got 2 tickets to the Holocaust Museum. Let's go. It's like, no. It's not what it's there for.
Yeah, it's like Eiffel Tower. It's like a romantic encounter on the Space Needle. Ouch.
not on, Mo. Not
with. Right.
Well, that's all I can know because I just think, oh my God, bring a blanket. If you're going to do it in the Eiffel Tower, bring a blanket.
Okay. Yeah, get some wet naps.
Or just, get the world's biggest prophylactic and put it over.
Maybe that's why Durex sponsored it.
What is Durex?
What is
make?
Durex?
What
they make condoms.
Don Durex makes God. Condoms.
Is that the problem that you just told us that?
I love you. I've got power. Jo bhi mujhe dekhe, bole hello flower. Sabhi ko hai mujhe se pyar, banna chahe sab mere yaar. Eiffel Tower.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fell in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming shows in Cleveland, Ohio, and Portland, Maine. Tickets for those shows go on sale this week. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Albert Garcia in Lake Havasu City.
Lake Arizona. Havasu City, Arizona.
Yeah.
Famed in song and story as the location of the London Bridge.
Yes.
Exactly. Not too many people knew that, but yeah.
Is it right out there, the old London Bridge, sitting in the middle of the city?
Pretty much right in the middle of everything, actually.
You ever walk over
it? You can't. Oh, yeah, you can walk, you can ride, you can go underneath it.
It's
over,
a bridge,
yeah, anything.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, Albert.
Thank you.
Carl Castle is going to read you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and 2 of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here's your first limerick.
Folks on foot and in cars, I now warn. My bike's not an object of scorn. No, I do not yell or tinkle my bell. I blast out their ears with my...
horn.
Yes, horn. Very good. Yes.
In
an effort to improve road safety for cyclists, a British cyclist has invented a bike horn that's louder than a fighter jet. The Hornster, as he has named it, clocks in at 178 decibels. That's 50 decibels louder than your average fighter. The one downside is that the name The Hornster is 50 times worse than the next worst name for an invention.
This has got to be illegal.
Well, it might well be, but he's really serious about bike safety. What can I tell you?
Yeah, but wouldn't that blasting it, like, blow your bike down?
I think you have to wear earmuffs.
Right.
Which keep you from hearing anything approaching you, which is why you have to keep blowing your horn.
Right.
Here is your next limerick.
Though my sessions are not peer-reviewed, I've updated old Ziggy Frude. It loosens their lips to look at me strip, so I analyze men while I'm...
stewed?
That might work just as well, actually.
I would give him that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what's wrong with you? There's 2 of you. No, that's not right.
Nude,
yes, nude, yeah. Therapist Sarah White of New York City is kickstarting what she hopes will become a popular new kind of therapy, naked therapy. She begins each session fully clothed. She gradually strips as her patient opens up for her emotionally.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Quote, Freud used free association, I use nakedness. Once you've really broken through with your key issues, you can move into the very important therapy lounge where she uses the therapy pole. All right, here's your last limerick.
Beer and wine, who's got time for that junk? One quick spritz and my mind goes kaplunk. It's hangover free, so what harm can there be? in using a spray to get...
drunk.
Yes, there you go. There's the drunk answer. Americans are just too busy these days to binge drink in the traditional way, but thanks to some French inventors, you can get fully intoxicated, they say, almost instantly with a special mouth spray. Finally, something more fun to do while waiting at traffic lights than checking your phone. Carl, how did Albert do in our quiz?
3 correct answers, Peter. So, Albert, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, Albert, and thanks for playing.
Talk to you
soon. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Tom Baudet has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Amy Dickinson has 3. Mo Rocca has 2.
Mo, you're in 3rd place. You're up first. The clock will start when you begin your first question. Fill in the blank. In an event dubbed Starmageddon, President Obama held a fundraising dinner this week at Blank's house.
George Clooney.
Right. In a late-night email to supporters on Monday, former Republican presidential candidate Blank endorsed Mitt Romney.
Rick Santorum.
Right. Best known for his book, Where the Wild Things Are, author Blank died Tuesday at age 83.
Maury Sendak.
Yes. Wanting to be, quote, cooler, a Nebraska man has legally changed his name to Blank.
Joe Cool.
Tyrannosaurus Rex. Okay. On Wednesday, the game maker Rovio announced that its game Blank had been downloaded 1 billion times.
Angry Birds?
Yes. In a ceremony in Greece on Thursday, the torch that will make its way to London for the summer Blank was lit.
Olympics.
Yes. This week, the Wall Street Journal did a story on a coffee shop that offers lattes, cappuccinos, and Blank.
Junk bonds? I don't know.
It offers lattes, cappuccinos, and paternity tests. To attract business from a nearby courthouse, City Coffee in Camden, New Jersey, is expanding its menu to include drug screening, tax preparation, and paternity tests. It can be a little dangerous mixing up these services. There's nothing more awkward than finding out you're the father of a grande chai tea latte. Carol, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Mo has the lead.
All right. Amy, you're up next. Amy, please fill in the blank. After 4 years as prime minister, on Monday, Blank was sworn in for his 3rd term as president of Russia.
Putin.
Yes. Days after she announced her dual citizenship, former GOP presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann withdrew her citizenship with Blank.
Switzerland?
Yes. Scott Thompson, the CEO of Yahoo, apologized this week for falsifying his Blank, but said he would not step down.
His resume educational.
Yes. One airline paid tribute to the late Beastie Boy MCA by posting Blank above their departure gate.
I don't know.
They posted the sign, "You've got to fight for your flight to depart."
Oh, boy.
I'm sure he would have been proud of that.
I think so.
Oh, boy.
Hairstyling legend Blank died on Wednesday at the age of 84.
Vidal Sassoon.
Right. I'll have another beat out the favorites to win this year's Blank last Saturday.
Kentucky Derby.
Right. An Iranian news agency photo of a ballistic missile test was determined to be fake after observers found Blank.
It was a banana?
No.
It
was... They found that the photo also contained a giant waving Jar Jar Binks.
No.
To Iran's credit, choosing the photoshopped Jar Jar photo did show some restraint. It could have gone with a photo of their missiles destroying the Death Star. If nothing else, the image reveals there's at least one more person in Iran more loathsome than Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. No. Mahmoud's like, that guy? I hate that guy. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz this week?
Amy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 13 points, and Amy has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, then, how many does Tom need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right, Tom, this is for the game. On Tuesday, voters in North Carolina passed a constitutional amendment against Blank.
Gay marriage.
Right. While on a flight to impress buyers, a new jetliner made in Blank crashed in Indonesia.
In Russia.
Yeah. On Wednesday, it was announced that a plan to close thousands of rural Blanks will be scrapped in favor of shorter hours.
Post offices.
Right. After over 30 years in office, Senator Blank lost the Indiana GOP primary.
Dick Lugar.
Right. This week, a Pennsylvania company sued Captain Morgan Rum for Blank.
The spray application.
No, for piracy. This week, archaeologists uncovered an ancient Mayan mural that seems to contradict the theory that the world will blank in 2012.
Well, and?
Yes, this week BBC Scotland surprised viewers with substitute weatherman Blank.
Substitute weatherman. What's his name?
The guy.
Yeah, no, the guy, right.
The guy whose name is.
Al Roker.
No.
Prince Al Roker.
Prince Charles.
Right, that it, weatherman.
It's adorable.
Did
watch it online.
Did he predict a lot of warming?
That was pretty close.
No. A University of Iowa student was busted using a stolen ID to get into a bar when it turned out the ID belonged to blank.
The bouncer.
Yes, in fact, indeed. The bouncer checking IDs.
Only because it's this show did I know that answer, right.
19-year-old Stephen J. Fiorella tried to get into a club using a fake ID he just bought at a party. Unfortunately for him, it didn't take the bouncer more than a second to realize he was staring at his own stolen driver's license. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers, but Tom had 6 correct answers. So with 16 points, Tom Baudette is this week's champion.
Well done, Tom.
Thank you very much.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict, after stepping on President Obama's same-sex marriage announcement, what will be the next surprise Vice President Biden ruins. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur language programs offering tools to record an answering machine greeting in 45 languages. Learn more at Pimsleur.com. The Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine. Online at poetryfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our intern is good old Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what surprise will Biden blow next? Tom Baudette.
He gets out over his skis on this Mother's Day thing and tells Michelle she's just going to love the necklace Brock and the girls got her for Sunday.
Amy Dickinson.
Next week at the John Edwards trial, Joe Biden will reveal that he is really the father of Rael Hunter's child.
And Mo Rocca.
Those who think Biden can't keep a secret will be shocked to learn that he is the double agent underwear bomber.
And if Joe Biden ruins any of those surprises, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudette, Amy Dickinson, and Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.